In September, a relatively small group of demonstrators with handwritten cardboard signs gathered in a small park in the heart of New York's financial district. They were barely noticed by cable news channels, pointedly ignored by most of the bankers and traders passing by, but they were persistent. They didn't break windows or attack police officers. They simply refused to go home. A month later, it's not a small group anymore, it's thousands, and it's not just New York, it's dozens of cities around the country. Whither goes the Occupy Wall Street protest? Joining us now, Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
You know, you're exactly the right person to talk to, I would think, because many of the Occupy Wall Street protesters say they've taken their inspiration from what happened in Tahrir Square.
Yeah, it's fascinating to talk to them about that. I mean, as a reporter, frankly, it did feel as if there were some parallels. I mean, you know, in Manhattan, we didn't have camels attacking us, bearing down on us. But the sense of disenfranchisement, the sense of just frustration with a political and economic system that, to the protesters, just feels broken, you know, that really is something somewhat similar, whether it's in Manhattan or in Tahrir.
Although, Nick Kristof, the protesters in Tahrir Square had at least, I mean, among the many diverse complaints and a variety of demands, there was one clear message: Hosni Mubarak must go. We're not getting that kind of clear message from the Occupy Wall Street protesters.
That's true, and but the folks both in Tahrir and in Occupy Wall Street just encompass a huge group and did have a range of messages. I think it's been harder for the people at Occupy Wall Street to crystallize a particular policy message. It's more outrage than policy demands, but they are, I think, tapping into just a deep national frustration at economic inequality, at a sense of lack of accountability. Al Gore talked about it as the primal scream of American democracy, and I think there is something there.
You know, there is something existential about it as well, which recalls your reporting in Egypt, in the sense that people gathered in Tahrir Square. In the beginning, they were basically saying, we can do this. We never done anything like this before, but we can do this, and the specifics will come later. For the time I've spent down in Liberty Square, where the protest moves during the day, Nicholas Kristof, that's kind of what people are saying as well, that we can do this and we'll work out the details later. And this sense of channeling outrage into an experience that's tangible seems to have a certain amount of, I don't know, validity to it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been, Tahrir was exhilarating and fun, and it drew people partly for that reason. And the same has been also true to a considerable extent of Occupy Wall Street. And people in both places have also been pretty good at theater, if you will, and figuring out just how to be funny at being alluring. And also in both places, they benefited from the police response. I mean, that was, you know, much more obvious in Tahrir, but the police pepper spraying women protesters at Zuccotti Park, that just gave a huge boost to what is happening in Occupy Wall Street.
How does this, or does it, become a real movement? And does it have to become political at some point? You know, I remember at the beginning of sort of the Tea Party gatherings, many of those protesters said they didn't want to be allied with any one party, and that didn't last long. They relatively quickly became associated with the Republican Party. Is that inevitable, that this will happen with the Occupy Wall Street protests as well? And is that the only way they're going to get anything done?
I just don't know. I mean, clearly, within the Democratic Party, there is some interest in kind of moving in and taking advantage of the Occupy Wall Street movement and even co-opting it to some degree. On the other hand, I think the protesters are really wary of that. I think they have a lot of complaints about an Obama White House that they see as much too close to big banks. In terms of where this goes, I think it's hard to say. As the weather gets colder, as snow falls in Manhattan, it's going to be a lot less fun to be out there. On the other hand, just as the police managed to really give the protests a huge boost by pepper spraying people, if Mayor Bloomberg, who, you know, normally is a really shrewd guy, if he really is intent on creating a confrontation and clearing the park, I think that will perhaps give, you know, huge new legs to this movement.
Well, let me ask you, we're speaking with Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, and you've had a chance to obviously watch these movements happening in the Arab world, where many of these protesters are taking their inspiration. So let me ask you, many people say that you need a defining character, a leader, in order for something to actually become successful. That didn't turn out to be the case in Egypt. It didn't necessarily turn out to be the case in Tunisia. They had one man as inspiration, but not leading the protests. So that probably means they don't necessarily need a galvanizing figure in New York either.
Tea Party doesn't even have a leader.
Yeah, you know, there's something here that reminds me a little bit of protests in China, because the way the Chinese government handles protests is that it arrests the leaders, but typically will give some kind of reward to the followers to make them leave. And so you have Chinese protests now that have, you know, no leaders, but, you know, 1,000 followers. And and right now what is happening with Occupy Wall Street is a little bit parallel to that. I think that, you know, it has managed to get this far. It has managed to find traction. It's managed to get a remarkable amount of media coverage and to strike a chord without having that kind of a leader. And so I think, you know, that the obstacle ahead is, you know, may have more to do with the weather than with that lack of a specific charismatic leader.
Well, one more question for you, Nick. You know, many people say that Hosni Mubarak made the mistake of not taking the protests there seriously at first. Is that a possible pitfall for the politicians here in the U.S.?
I think the big pitfall for Mayor Bloomberg is overreacting. I think he may do that today. I think that the issue of economic inequality has been projected onto the national agenda to some degree by these protesters, and I think and hope that politicians are going to have to ignore that issue at their peril.
Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And we want to get your opinion as well. What do you think? Has this protest become a movement? Would you participate? Are you against it? 877-8-MY-TAKE. Post your comment at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.